the near post. Rossi to the net. Mamma mia! Ramel Kyoko now. Here's a Hunter. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise. La Pantarita. It's a Honduran connection.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into the show, everybody. I've got a World Cup 2026 update. Houston Dynamo in action Thursday. Houston Dash in action tomorrow. But I want to know, who are these Euro snobs bagging on Fred? Well, what, Aaron, what happened?
This was about, a month ago
what
now?
What happened there?
When Bundesliga started up, we were talking some scores and stuff like that, and several people...
apparently Euro snobs were banging on Fred.
Yeah, they...
Saying he wasn't qualified. Why would you do that? When you get mainstream media talking about you, why would you do that when we've cried for more soccer talk?
Can you hear me, Glenn?
Well, I can now.
So, apparently, this is about a month ago, we were talking, it was right when Bundesliga started up. Fred was talking a little bit. We were doing some score reviews, and people were texting in and saying, you're not qualified to talk on soccer. Stop trying to talk soccer, blah, blah, blah. So that killed the attitude of soccer's welcome on the show. If somebody wants to talk and hear soccer, they're going to have to listen to you.
Many a fool. Why would you do that?
I don't know. If you care about the game, I would want everybody to talk
about it. This is the world we live in now.
Yeah,
this is the world we live in, especially when we want more mainstream media. So to whoever those people are, the Euro snobs or telling people they can't talk about soccer, was that segment you guys did at the end with the Blitz?
We call that Hey Man Bleep That.
Yeah, I would Hey Man Bleep That. All right. Home Studio FC, we continue on here. We've been doing this since March. It's pretty incredible because you have to be careful when you're hosting radio and TV from your home. And I notice there's a lot of people that, you know, because you're in the four walls of your home and you're safe, you know, you do kind of lose touch about things. And you can believe you're the forlorn authority on everything. I don't believe that. I'm like Marcelo Bielsa. I'm going to have a lot of humility in my game. But this is from Home Studio FC. Soccer Matters presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors. DaspitLaw.com. We're streaming tonight at ESPN975.com. You heard the voice of the talented Aaron Raybould. Hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Soccer, Facebook Soccer Matters throughout the show. We might just give you a shout-out during this tonight. Call-in number. 713-780-3776. Your chance, Houston Dash fans. I mean, you're in the semifinals tomorrow of the NWSL Challenge Cup. This is potentially a very defining moment for the club culture of the Dash. You know, Dash haven't made the playoffs. They're trying to change the culture under James Clarkson. The players are producing and working hard. But this is your chance to call in here tonight and talk about the NWSL, the Dash, whatever you like. Houston Dynamo fans, where are you after two games? Dynamo going down to Portland 2-1. We'll talk about that tonight. Next game is the LA Galaxy. And they're a hot mess right now. We're going to talk with Kevin Baxter of the LA Times about that Dynamo LA game. Chicharito Hernandez has gone back to Los Angeles. He's left the bubble. We will have Tom Marshall of ESPN FC on tonight to talk about the start of Liga MX. Jane Campbell, the Houston Dash, all the heroics in goal during their win over Utah Royals. And then, very excited about the interview tonight with Graham Smith. He's the chief football writer at the Yorkshire Evening Post. And after 16 years, legendary club Leeds United, back in the Premier League under Marcelo Bielsa. It's kind of an odd couple relationship, which has turned into something amazing. Can't wait to interview Graham Smith, the chief football writer at the Yorkshire Evening Post. A lot to talk about there. By the way, there's a former Major League Soccer player who has been a big part of that rise and that promotion by the name of Jack Harrison. Played at Wake Forest, played at New York City FC. He is on loan from Manchester City. to Leeds United. So there you go. Sometimes we forget, we don't pay attention to the English Championship. All right. So, again, we're streaming at ESPN975.com. Those are your four guests on the show tonight. So World Cup 2026 update. Now, this is from yesterday. The Houston World Cup committee bid did a video conference with FIFA and Dan Flynn of U.S. Soccer. We are one of the cities bidding in the United States to be a host of the World Cup. Now, look, this is the elusive white whale. You get this. This is the biggest sporting event you've ever brought to Houston, Texas. Sorry, Super Bowl fans. Not even close. You'll get six games. This will be so global, it'll be beyond belief. It'll be like having six Super Bowls. Be people coming from all over the world here. The potential of revenue up to $1 billion. And more importantly, the potential to rise the tide in a huge way from where we are soccer-wise in this city. All right, so today I spoke with Chris Kennedy of the Houston World Cup Committee. Okay, I wanted to get a lot of information because I wanted to pass it on to you, the listener. 13 people were on this call, including 8 from the Houston Committee. Here's the 8 people that comprise the Houston Committee. It's Chris Kennedy, it's Mayor Sylvester Turner, it's John Arnold, who is the bid head. He's a businessman and a philanthropist. Janice Burke of the Sports Authority, Mark Miller, the GM of Energy Park, Susan Christian, the Director of Special Events in Houston, John Solis, the convention of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and then John Walker, the president of the Houston Dynamo. That's the 8 people on the Houston Committee speaking to FIFA, and also Dan Flynn. Now, Dan Flynn came on, apparently, and this is all per Chris. I'm just paraphrasing here. He gave Houston, Chris Kennedy, he gave Houston a big, you know, thumbs up and kudos in his opening remarks. Sylvester Turner then apparently painting the vision of the city. The nuts and bolts presentation came from Chris Kennedy. And that's where they got into the work that the committee has been doing. A lot of positives were accented in that presentation. The diversity of the city, the economic, Houston as a travel hub. They pointed out how the city mobilized and united during Hurricanes Katrina and Harvey. Talked about operational readiness, which is in regard basically to hosting big events in the past, like the Super Bowl, NCAA, March Madness, you know, all that. Features of Energy Park were also outlaid. Training fields, referee and team base camps, turf growth studies. Now, that has been a bit of a problem in the past, the surface there, but that has to be spot on for a World Cup. Houston has a thing also, and I did not know anything about this, and I trust maybe you don't know about this. Houston has a thing called the Texas Big Events Trust Fund, which encourages the city to go out and bid on these big events, to keep bringing events here, people here. I didn't know about this. For instance, out of that fund during the Super Bowl that we held, $25 million comes out of that fund to help support the Super Bowl. So Houston has that additional fund, which I would think is a feather in the cap. Now, the Super Bowl generated about $350 million in revenue. So think of 6 World Cup games here. And then again, some doing math and saying it could generate $1 billion in revenue. Who knows? But it's going to put Houston on the map like there's no tomorrow. Apparently, it was a one-hour meeting. It was done by video conference. FIFA was very complimentary. They had questions around training fields, rental fees, where fan fests would be held. And according to Chris Kennedy, he says the questions in the future are going to get a little bit deeper and from FIFA. So, there'll be another meeting. It's still a year and a half until a decision is made if Houston will be a host city or not for World Cup 2026, which is trilaterally being hosted by the United States, Mexico, and Canada. We can't miss on this. This is the biggest fish you could land. this is a can't miss because this opportunity is not going to come around again. So I do believe there's tremendous pressure to get this event here. Tremendous pressure. And yes, it's 2026, but you know, the work and the politicking and the way to get this done occurs all up until a year and a half from now when the decisions will be made. Economics aside, okay, and a lot of this is about economics. We know that. This is what sports is nowadays. But simply think, and this is me just going into my, you know, I don't know, you might even call me naive. I don't know if you're going to call me naive, but this is me going back into the game that I love, the sport that I love, the sport that thrills me every day, the sport that I've spent my entire life involved with, whether as a player, in youth player development, or now in media. By the way, I got into media because I wanted the game to get more media. That's actually how I got into it. There was a motive behind it, because I just looked at the time at our sport and what little media it had. Fred Fowler was one of my sports editors at the Houston Chronicle. So there's another reason why you shouldn't have banged him, you Euro snobs. He was actually supportive of the game of soccer to the point that he wanted two of my columns every week talking about soccer. So whoever the geeks were who, oh, you don't know enough about it and all that stuff, that's a major league mistake in this country with media. Major league. I mean, that's a major red card. So getting back to the connection with the game. Simply think how the tide would rise here with all levels of soccer in this town. Youth, adult, you would have sons and daughters waking up in their house, going to a historic, indelible World Cup match in their hometown, which they would forever talk about. There's going to be six of them. And that one game that they go to might be that one game or moment that will be referred to forever as the moment they fell in love with the world's greatest game. We all have that moment. You might even want to tell me what your moment is. 713-780-3776. Mine was 1974, World Cup final, Netherlands, West Germany. I wasn't even at it. I was watching it on a screen in Madison Square Garden with 18,000 Dutch and Germans, who did not like each other very much, by the way. As you could understand. That was my defining moment. That's when I said, man, I want to be like Cruyff. Little did I know. But I want to take the game as far as I can. I want to be involved with it the rest of my life. And a lot of my friends will cite that game. So you'll have that moment in this town, that game, that live game, that one moment that will never be forgotten. 20 years after that moment, when those kids get older and have families, they're going to still talk about that day to their kids. And this is where exponentially how the game compounds and grows. There's nothing like a World Cup. Nothing. It's the best sporting event in the world. You know why? Because you got to wait 4 years for it. Nobody likes waiting anymore. Nobody likes patience. You got to wait. And that means there's less games and there's less moments. And when a goal is scored in a World Cup, it's a historic goal. When a player gets to play and go on the field in a game in a World Cup, it's a historic moment. It's a moment that every person who kicks a soccer ball wishes they had. Now, this is an opportunity that's not going to come around for a long time again in many of our lives and our lifetimes. Houston, let's get this. We have soccer history professionally dating back to the late 60s. The Astrodome has hosted Real Madrid and West Ham. You've had four or five pro teams. You got history here. You got to celebrate it. You got to be proud of it. And it goes way back beyond 2006. And thankfully, in 2006, we got the San Jose Earthquakes and we got Major League Soccer. We've had Manchester United here, Manchester City, the Mexican national team. probably every single Liga MX team has played here. In fact, in the 80s, I played against some of them, you know, in high school stadiums. There is history. Sheffield United came here once. So this is big, and there is pressure. We need the World Cup here in 2026. All right. Again, as I mentioned, Tom Marshall, ESPN FC, on the show tonight. Jane Campbell of the Houston Dash. Kevin Baxter of the LA Times. Graham Smith. All right. When we come back, 713-780-3776. Lots to talk about. Houston Dynamo, Houston Dash. I got some stuff from MLS to talk about. And how about some celebrities and former U.S. Women's National Team players forming a group to bring the NWSL to L.A.? I got some thoughts on that. That is fantastic. It's not just saying, hey, we should have NWSL in L.A. It's taking their resources, these former women's national team players. Mia Hamm, Tish Venturini, Julie Foudy, Joy Fawcett, Rachel Buehler, Abby Wambach. And then you got celebrities, Eva Longoria, Jennifer Garner, Jessica Chastain, Lauren Holiday, and Alex Ohanian, the co-founder of Reddit, investing on behalf of his wife, Serena Williams. Louisville enters the NWSL next year in 2022. Take a break. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm and Lustau Vermouth. Try the Rojo over ice. It's great in Manhattan as well. Or mix it with a little tonic water or even a little bit of club soda. It's got a real hint of caramel and cola. You got to ask for Lustau Vermouth at your favorite liquor store. Break.
ESPN 97.5.
Hello, people. This is Alexi Lawless, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN.
All right, we come back with I Go Wild, Rolling Stones. All right, couple of things here really to get us updated on, and I'm very excited about this segment coming up and then the rest tonight here because we're going all around the world. We're going down to Mexico City. We're going over to England and Leeds in the U.K., and then we're going down to Orlando with Kevin Baxter and then Jane Campbell out in Utah. So we're going all over the world tonight. La Liga update brought to you by Lustau Vermouth. Get a little Spain in your life. Lustau Vermouth, fun, whether over ice with tonic or club soda, or my favorite, in a fine gin and tonic with some orange peel and a few drops of lime juice. Lustau Vermouth is refreshing. L-U-S-T-A-U. Lots of botanicals in it too, by the way. Whether you get the Rojo with the hints of caramel or cola, which is good in a Manhattan or over ice, or dark spirits, or the rosé or white, which I love in a gin and tonic, you can get a bit of Spain in your life. Lustau Vermouth, ask for it at your liquor store. It's L-U-S-T-A-U. Houston Dash this Wednesday, 11:30 Central Time against the Portland Thorns, CBS All Access. This is a big moment for the Dash. And the reason being, is this is a tournament they need maybe more than any of the teams in it to change the culture and perception. And then on Thursday, the Dynamo will take on the LA Galaxy. That's 7 o'clock on 2NA and Fox Sports 1. The Dynamo need a win in that to potentially advance. They're taking on the LA Galaxy, who got thrashed by LA FC. All right, the Dynamo coming off a 2-1 loss to the Portland Timbers. Here's some sound bites from Todd Ramos first. The difference between game one and two at the MLS's back tournament in Orlando.
I mean, two very different games from your first match against LAFC to today, particularly because the opponent, Portland, is much more compact. They will sit back. I'm interested in what your strategy was for your front three. What did you want from them? Did you expect perhaps Darwin to be a little bit more of a creator tonight?
Yeah, well, we wanted to bring Darwin inside. So that we can leave all the room wide for Adam. We knew that they defended very narrow. So we tried to exploit the width, which we did. We had somewhere around 20 crosses in the game. We just weren't able to cash in on them.
So a lot of numbers there. That was from the presser, so you actually heard the question as well. Then we talked about goalkeeper Marko Maric. He was asked about his performance.
Early in the game, Marko Maric made some pretty big saves. Can you just talk about his overall performance tonight for the team?
Yeah, I thought he had a good game. I think we need to continue to make progress in terms of, you know, playing out of the back, being more being able to get wide quickly and giving him some options so that we can play more out of the back. But overall, in goal, I think he had a good game.
All right, so there's Todd Ramos. So the Dynamo take the Galaxy on again Thursday at 7 o'clock Central on TUDN and FS1. The Dynamo must win to advance. Plus, it's a game that counts against your record. So if we're looking at the overall record in the league and there is a season beyond this, which seems like there will be a 12-18-game season, that's what Don Garber wants. Right now, the Dynamo are 0-2-2. They're coming off a 2-1 loss to the Timbers, and Todd Ramos still looking for that first win. I'm still going to tell you that he's been a very good hire for this club. He is a very inclusive guy. He is a very straight-to-the-point guy. And we're going to get more into him and how he's going to try to make this his team. And this is just my opinion. The Dynamo, yeah, they had plenty of shots and crosses. They didn't make the final ball. They didn't finish. I thought they had two really, really good clear chances at the end of the first half. They didn't take, especially the Albert, the least chance after a wonderful build-up. And then a wonderful little dummy from Mauro Manotas. He makes a run inside. They do find him, but I would put that down to a great save by Steve Clark, the Portland goalkeeper, who just he got off his line so quick. There was nothing that Mauro could hit but the goalkeeper. Albert Deliz was suspended unfairly, I believe. The second yellow he received didn't deserve it. There was something going on with him, the referee, the whole game, if you were watching very closely. Now back to Todd Ramos. He's a 4-3-3 guy. He wants his team to be aggressive getting into the box. That's a good thing if you're a Dynamo fan. That's happened in two games. Now, the other side of the coin is how they've defended and how they've been exposed. And then the real question becomes is, do you continue with this system, the 4-3-3? Because this is the future and how you want to play infinitely in the big picture 2-3 years from now. So the question is, you know, you want a quick fix, but you also are going to have to suffer through some pain to allow this coach to do his work, to get the players in that he needs ultimately. There's a lot of players out of contract at the end of the season. It's easy to say and be on the outside and be finite and just say, well, we want to win now. Well, yeah, we all do. I don't think there's any question, but if we're really being honest, it's going to take some time to build this thing. Now, I may be completely wrong. On Thursday, Todd Ramos might go to a 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1 to protect the center backs more, to protect the counter. They'll become a little bit more conservative than in the 4-3-3. They'll have more bodies in midfield. I could be completely wrong here. But are you doing yourself then justice in the rebuild by doing that? Is that a step back or is that a step forward? So do you stay with the system that you believe in? He's had success with. And then you have to say, well, do we have the pieces that fit that system? These are tough decisions. That's why he's the coach. But you're going to have to put out fires when the ball turns over. In a 4-3-3, there's always going to be moments of transition that fires have to be put out. And then the question is, did Tab inherit a team that has all the correct parts for that type of a system? And that's why he's the manager. But the future has to be solved, and you know, I mean, honestly, he needs 2 to 3 years to get this really moving in the right direction with inclusivity, with the youth setup and all the other things that are going on and personnel changes. I mean, look, he wants to like every player and he wants to give them every opportunity. But there are players in anyone's mind as a coach that you just don't think are cutting it. Let's face it, this isn't youth soccer. You know, his job's on the line, too. There's a lot of players out of contract next year. There'll be turnover. Now, habitually, this is a team moving from being solely a counterattacking team under Wilmer Cabrera. Now, if you do remember, the original desire was to play a 4-3-3 and be aggressive. But Cabrera couldn't get couldn't get the two-way buy-in once the ball turned over. So ultimately, the team turned into strictly a counter-attacking team. Invite people in, get the ball to Kyoto, get the ball to Albert Elise, and let's go. And it was a bit of a train off the rails. It was exciting in 2017. It wasn't built for the long term. And the buy-in defensively wasn't there. And habits are hard to break. And in a 4-3-3, you got guys that don't, you know, necessarily defending is not the first thing they're thinking about. It's not hard to figure out. And that's not a slam on anybody. Look, Portland figures out a way how to play without Diego Valeri doing much defending. We just saw that. This is not an easy managerial job. But my assumption is Tab is going to have time to get this worked out. And I do believe he's going to get his first win in MLS against the LA Galaxy. Chicharito has gone back to Los Angeles. So those are some of my thoughts. You tell me about the Houston Dynamo, your thoughts, 713-780-3776. Or you can call in and you can tell me what was the one game that ignited your passion for the game of soccer. What was the one game? I mentioned mine, Netherlands, West Germany, 74 World Cup final. In fact, one of those great players who was a starting right back for the Netherlands, Wim Serbier, who spent part of a year down here playing with the Houston Dynamos in the 80s. Wim at the time, I think, was 36. He just passed away, sadly, but truly a legend in the game. He won three European Cups with Ajax, and I remember when he was signed, I was just going, this can't be happening. And Wim, like a lot of those guys, got taken advantage of financially, Dutch players. Okay, so now let's move on to the Houston Dash. Now the Dash will be taking on the Portland Thorns. The Dash come off this game against Utah, which was a lot of drama. That was the type of galvanizing penalty kick shootout win led by Jane Campbell saving Vero on the last one that can bring a team together. Let's put some facts out there. This is a knockout tournament now. So some of these facts aren't even going to matter. It's not even going to matter that the Dash haven't scored in the last three games. Haven't scored a goal since those two great first games. Doesn't matter. It's conceivable that you could win penalties in the next two games and be the champions of this tournament behind Jane Campbell. And you can rest assured, Portland Thorns don't want to go to penalties. That's slightly in the back of their minds. These teams are going to want to win the game over the course of the first 90 minutes. So they got Portland Thorns, who, by the way, have been no goal-scoring shakes themselves. They've only scored three goals in the tournament. But they got the vital one to knock out the champions, North Carolina Courage, who everybody thought was a shoo-in to win this tournament. They knocked them out. What a galvanizing win for them. And they used their third-string goalkeeper, who's hardly ever played, named Britt Eckerstrom, who had an outstanding game in goal. So this is a game about goalkeepers. Two great stories. Eckerstrom had eight saves. They defended like there was no tomorrow. They are missing some of their key pieces as well, like Tobin Heath and a number of other players, which, by the way, if you're an MWSL fan, are you disappointed that Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe, Tobin Heath, Kristen Press, none of them are there? I mean, I honor their decisions not to be there. Mallory Pugh. Now, some of them are injured, apparently. Others didn't want to play because of COVID, and I totally respect that. But CBS can't be happy they're not playing. And then on the other hand, both these tournaments, the MLS is back and the NWSL Challenge Cup. It has been a wonderful opportunity for new players to make their marks, like Brick Eckerstrom, like Bree Vasali for the Houston Dash. She was outstanding in the last game. She was so outstanding, people were calling her Rachel Daly. Couldn't tell the difference between the two. She was buzzing everywhere. Back to the Dynamo against the LA Galaxy. It's three games in 11 days. So does Minor Figueroa go again? Does Kiki Struna go again? Does Boniac Garcia go again? How much shuffling is there in their lineup? And who gets the start? No Albert Elise. Does Nico Lemoine get the start? Tommy McNamara, Tomas Martinez. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what Tab Ramos' lineup is against the LA Galaxy. It's a must-win game, and I think they're going to win it. And Galaxy are in real trouble. And like I said, Kevin Baxter of the LA Times is coming up on this show. All right, so back to the Houston Dash. They blew it out of the water the first two games when it came to going forward and attacking. Through Christy Mewis, through Shea Groom, through Rachel Daly. Scored some great goals. Drew the first game, didn't manage the game out, won the second game, and then the next two games lost to Sky Blue and Washington Spirit, then got into the knockout round, won the knockout round game. So it doesn't matter what's happened past. What you did see, though, and credit James Clarkson, what you did see was a better team shape and collective nature play from the Houston Dash against Utah Royals. Best chance was Nichelle Prince, pushed off the post from former Texas goalkeeper Abby Smith. But their team shape was better. And maybe the team's getting a little bit more cautious. But team shape was something I questioned up to that point because it was entertaining. It was up and down. It was open. You had Mewis flying forward, Shea Groom flying forward, all kinds of people flying forward. Rachel Daly, chances left and right, lots of goals in the first two games, a lot of wow factor. Now we get into the knockout stages, and it gets a little bit tighter. Gets a little bit tighter. So it'll be interesting to see what the lineup James Clarkson puts out, because I would think Bree Vasali's got to get another start. I thought she was impressive. And he did make some changes. Megan Oyster's having a few injury problems. There have been a few at the back. There has been a little rotation with defenders. In front of Jane Campbell, and Jane Campbell is peaking at the right time. So peaking at the right time in these tournaments are also very, very important. Again, the Dash in action on Thursday. And again, this is a big moment for this franchise and this club. They will take on in the semifinals Portland Thorns, who've had their trials and tribulations and injuries as well. And then that's going to be on CBS All Access. Then Sunday, if they win that game, they'll be in the final on Sunday, which is, I believe, 11:30 Central Time as well. That's on big CBS. So you don't have to have the CBS All Access for that package. So exciting times here. We got the Dash tomorrow, 11:30 Central Time in the morning. We've got tomorrow night in Austin, Texas on Horn FM. Soccer Matters brought to you by DaspitLawAustin.com. And then on Thursday, we get to watch the Dynamo. They're going to have to do it without Albert Elise against the LA Galaxy, who are really reeling under Guillermo Barros-Schelotto. To that question I put out, Hector Zapata says, 94 World Cup watching the Mexican national team lose against Bulgaria in PKs, watching Jorge Campos. That was the moment for me. And we're talking about moments that won you over for the game of football. Tom Scott says, Netherlands, Argentina, 98 World Cup. That was down in Argentina. U.S., Norway, 1996 Olympic women's semifinal. Jason Elliott, 1983 MISL game at the old Chicago Stadium. That's indoor. Buffalo Stallions against Chicago Sting. Big crowd, incredibly loud. Wow. Richard Terry said, Debrecen versus Hajduk Split in Hungary, July of 2005. Richard, love that one. UEFA Champions League qualifier it was. Defining pivotal moment in my true passion for the game. Our great friend Evan, who is a real warrior. MLS Cup 2001 with the Quakes winning in overtime. I hardly remember much. I was real young. I just remember Dwayne De Rosario getting the game-winning golden goal. Well, there's a lot more coming in. John says, John Hawthorne, 2012 Champions League final, Drogba, man. Craig Koshkin, U.S. against Portugal, 2002 World Cup, cemented my must-watch any U.S. men's national team game attitude. Here's somebody saying, Hurricanes versus Texans, summer of 93. That was a youth soccer game. You know what? Might have happened at a youth soccer field for you. George Raphael says, it wasn't one game, but me living in Spain, 81-82. La Liga game, Spain friendlies leading up to the World Cup. Bon Ronum, every highlight show on Soccer Made in Germany with Toby Charles on PBS, early 80s. I watched that too, Bon. Justin Casillo, 2006 Champions League final. Pete Pranica, 0-0 draw between Notre Dame and defending national champion North Carolina in St. Louis. Charles Beyer, beating the Hurricanes 94 at Bear Creek. Low blow, Charles. That was my youth soccer club. He was a good player, though. Bubba Beyer was his name, actually. I even remember that, so there you go, buddy. Ireland, Italy at the 94 World Cup, Dan Skinner. All right, we're taking a break. It's brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Break coming up. The one and only Kevin Baxter of the LA Times from Orlando.
The sweat dripping down my back. It's like I'm having...
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
So let me tell you about Johnny Winter, past and recent years. Beaumont, Texas area, one of the all-time nastiest blues players ever. Him and his brother Edgar Winter, they were albinos. Man. He covered a lot of Rolling Stones songs, too, and all the great bluesmen. But what a guitar player. All right, so a little RIP to Johnny Winter. Quick shout out here, and I wanted to make sure I said a big thank you to Alvin Community College professor Denise Bates for having me on a Zoom with one of her classes talking TV and radio broadcasting. I absolutely love doing those things with youth. I've done it with different colleges and classes and high schools, but always love that. Always fun to talk about the career, because my entree into the career in TV might be different and a little bit more unique, but either way, those are great moments. All right, we're going down to the bubble in Orlando. This is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Also, the quick La Liga update brought to you by Lustau Vermouth. Get a little Spain in your life. Lustau Vermouth, fun, fun, fun. Whether over ice with tonic or club soda, or my favorite in the fine gin and tonic with orange peel and a few drops of lime juice, Lustau Vermouth is refreshing. It's by the numbers, Real Madrid, the La Liga update, 34th title, 87 points. First title since 2017 and 18. 26 wins, 8 draws, 3 losses. They only gave up 25 goals. Their leading goal scorer, Karim Benzema, with 21. They actually had 26 players on their roster get minutes, 21 players scored goals. That was the La Liga update brought to you by Lustau Vermouth. And like I said, I like it in a gin and tonic with all the botanicals, good tonic water, and a little orange peel. It is very refreshing. With that, we bring in the LA Times Kevin Baxter. Kevin, would you like a Lustau gin and tonic right now in Orlando?
I was just going to ask you for one of those. You're making it sound really good.
I'll get in my car and bring it down. They are actually incredibly refreshing. So listen, how are you in the bubble? And first, just kind of give us an insight to your work down there, how it's all working out, and how it is covering the tournament, because you are one of the great soccer writers in this country.
Well, I am actually bubble adjacent. MLS had dangled the possibility of some writers going into the bubble, and a lot of us wanted to. The feeling was, look, we know it'd be dangerous and it was also going to be expensive, but our news organizations are going to pay for that. I think it's $550 a night to be in the NBA bubble. But the deal was, we thought, you know what, there's been games played before and there's going to be games played afterwards. What makes this tournament unique is being in the bubble. And MLS at the last minute pulled that out from under us and said that they weren't going to allow any what they consider extraneous people in the bubble. They do have their each team has, you know, social media people in there. There are rights holders like Univision and Fox and ESPN have reporters in there, but we couldn't get in. So what the reporters that are here, and there's very, very, very few of them, we're at other hotels, and then we go to the games, and we have a very, very poor place that we sit down in the corner where you really can't – the other end of the field is just a rumor. It's much easier to cover it on TV, which is where I'll be covering the knockout rounds after the Galaxy and LAFC play this Thursday. I'll be going home. But in the stadium, there is no atmosphere, no noise. You can hear some of the piped-in crowd noise on TV. There are no announcements made if there's a yellow card, a substitution, a VAR review. It's not like the Premier League where they make the stadium announcements. There's none of that. So you really have to pay attention. And, you know, like I said, half of the field isn't even visible. So the print media, I think, radio, forget radio, the print media was certainly an afterthought. In fact, it was funny because we know that this is kind of a made-for-TV thing, but before the very first game, if you remember back to Inter Miami and Orlando City, the first game, as one of the PR people from MLS was walking the reporters into their press area, he said, "Remember, folks, this is a TV studio, so stay out of the way." And that was about all I needed to know about how this tournament was going to be run.
Wow. Kevin Baxter, LA Times, talking with us, and we appreciate him ahead of the Dynamo and LA Galaxy. So it's a must-win game for both these teams. Let's just get an overview from your perspective of where the Galaxy are. It has been a rough tournament for them.
Right, and I was stunned by Gilberto Scalotto, the Galaxy coach. After the game with LAFC, the 6-2 game, which was not even that close, he said that he thought his team had given up at about the 70-minute mark. What the players said sort of through their gritted teeth was that they were gassed. That, you know, when I was driving home that night at about 1:30 in the morning, the temperature dial on my car said it was 80 degrees. So it was hotter than that when the game was being played with the humidity that you all know so well where you are. It was brutal conditions. And Bob Bradley, the LAFC coach, made all five substitutions. Beryl Scalotto did not make any substitutions until after the hour mark. And he made most of his substitutions when the game was already decided. His players said they were gassed. He said, the coach, Guillermo Scalotto, said he didn't notice anyone dragging. The player said, "Then you weren't looking because we were exhausted." Anyway, the point is he called them out for quitting, and then he doubled down on that today. In the press conference today, he said that he doesn't know what the problem is with the team. He doesn't know how to correct it. He thinks it's a mental thing. But he says every player on the team has to be ready to go for 90 minutes. When you give up, it's bad for the team. I don't think that's going to play very well in the locker room, that the coach is saying that these guys have quit when he's not making any tactical changes during the game, not reacting to the game. The Galaxy come out of the locker room with a game plan, and if the other team gives them a different look that they weren't prepared for, there's no adjustments made. And so I think that the blame should go on the coach, not on the players. I don't think they've given up. I don't think he's given them the tools they need to play with.
So here's what I saw. I saw the first 20 minutes. They brought a pressing game, and it was actually very effective, and it was making it difficult for LAFC to kind of build out of the back. And that was maybe the period of the game that they were best, and I believe they scored a goal or two during that time. But look, I want to get to this with you, Kevin. Chicharito becomes available. They make this huge signing. He gets dropped into a team that I don't think has ever been the team for him when it comes to supporting the type of player that he is. I don't think even from the first game when the Dynamo played him in Houston that there's a good enough wide game around Chicharito to get the best out of him. He's different than Carlos Vela, as we all know. How frustrated is Chicharito? How much is this also about maybe the quality of players at the LA Galaxy have assembled? Are they good enough?
Well, they're not deep enough. And no, I don't think they're good enough. And going back to Scalotto, I don't think that's an excuse for him because he's gotten the players that he's asked for. Emilio Insúa, Giancarlo Gonzalez, who's been hugely disappointing. Pavone, yeah. These are the guys, these are hand-picked players that he wanted, and those are the players he had, and then he had Zlatan last year. But you make an excellent point. The wide game, you know, if they had brought Roman Alessandrini back, I think it would be a totally different story. Is Chicharito frustrated? I don't think he's happy, but if you watch the game, the earlier game when they played LAFC, the one voice you could hear screaming from the bench is Chicharito, who, as you know, is out with a calf strain. It may actually be a calf tear, and he has returned to L.A. So he did not play against LAFC, and he won't play against Houston. But he was definitely into the game on the bench. So I think he's being a good teammate. Yeah, I do think that he's disappointed. I think it's been a series of disappointments for him. West Ham didn't work out. Sevilla didn't work out. This doesn't seem to be working out. But you make a good point about bringing in a player that doesn't fit the system and doesn't fit the players around him. This is becoming an issue with the Galaxy, even going back to the very end of the Bruce Arena era when management wanted to bring in Gio Dos Santos and Steven Gerrard, neither of which worked out. They didn't fit the style. They didn't contribute much on the field as much as they had been expected to. The coaching staff didn't want either one of those guys. Management wanted to bring them in. Then you have Zlatan. They had built a team around Ola Kamara and some others. Then they bring in Zlatan. They have to blow that up and play Zlatan style. And now Chicharito becomes available to replace Zlatan, at least at the box office. And they force him into that offense. And you're right, it doesn't really fit. But I think the Galaxy are a little bit caught in between on what they're trying to accomplish. Are they trying to be the Galaxy with big-name designated players who sell out all their games and have a good road draw? If they're doing that, they're probably succeeding, but they're not winning. Or do they want to be a team that wins? When that's the model around the league. When you look at Seattle, they don't have big-name designated players. They have good players. Atlanta, you know, Josef Martínez maybe, but most of their guys are good young players who you're not going to go buy their jersey necessarily, but you're going to enjoy watching them play. And the Galaxy seem to still be stuck in that MLS model from maybe 10 years ago where you get a big name and build around him, and it doesn't seem to be working.
Well, let me just offer this, Kevin, and let me see what you think on this. Look, a Chicharito doesn't come around very often because of all the other things, the merchandising and the attention and the love of the Mexican fan with Chicharito. So maybe it's just that moment where, look, we may not have the right team to support him right now. We'll try to figure that out. But this is a signing that we can't let go by. Is that possible? And then, hey, we're going to try to make do with it. But there's no doubt that this is a guy that needs width in attack. He needs a wide game. He needs people to pull center backs off him so that he has room to run and attack crosses. And he's one of the best at that. But was it one of those moments where, you know, you just say, look, he's available. We've tracked him. We've made contact. We got a shot at signing him. We got to do it. And well, maybe to keep up with LAFC.
No, that's a big part of it, to keep up with LAFC. Now, they built around a Mexican national team star, and the Galaxy felt like they were losing the Mexican-American fan base, which they've never really had. They didn't come out. They did at the very beginning for Gio, but then they kind of faded. They haven't adopted Jonathan Dos Santos. They have adopted Carlos Vela. So there's no doubt that that's figured into it. You know, I've been a Chicharito fan for a long time. In fact, my dog, it's a girl dog, so it's Chicharita, but she's named after Javier Hernandez. So I've been told, by the way, never to tell him my dog's named after him. But I am a huge fan, and he was he is what the Galaxy need, but he's not, if you know what I mean. He's definitely the box office draw. There's 6 million Mexican Americans in Southern California. He's a charismatic player, he's bilingual, he's a good looking guy, he's outgoing, he has a personality, and he still can contribute on the field. So he ticks off all those boxes. But maybe it's the supporting cast. It's interesting to note that in every game that Chicharito's played this year, the three games he's played this year, he has had the lowest number of touches among starters. And I know that he's not a guy that gets the ball a lot, but if he's your striker, he has to have the ball more than that. He didn't have a shot on goal in the first two games that he played. He was moving in the box a little bit like the old Chicharito in the last game, the game against Portland when he scored the goal. But he's not the player he was before, and he doesn't have the supporting cast around him. That's kind of a combination for disaster. And you're right. If the Galaxy are going to keep him, and he's their DP, and he is, he's their $6 million guy, he's their highest paid player, they have him for another 2.5 years. So either you decide we're just going to sell jerseys with this guy and send him on the field and he's not going to be part of the offense, or we're going to build around him. And we know that Christian Pavone is we're pretty certain Christian Pavone is gone at the end of the season. He's going to be too expensive to keep. And you have Chicharito for two more years. Maybe that's where you go out and get some guys that can feed the beast and retool again. That may not happen with Guillermo Barros-Schelotto, though. This is a three-year rebuilding project for Dennis Pecosa. He's a year and a half into it, and the Galaxy are off to the worst start in their 25-year history, so it's not working.
Troubling times, and they are going to have to find a wide game and players that are a little bit leaning more towards being traditional wingers, because I don't think Rolf Felcher is going to be the guy who's going to be able to provide the width for Chicharito. Listen, Kevin, as always, great stuff from you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I will not tell anybody that your dog is named Chicharito. I'll keep that to myself. And my listeners
appreciate
will
that.
Too. And thank you, as always, for coming on. We look forward to having you on again in the future. Thanks for taking the time out for us.
Thanks for the call.
All right, that's Kevin Baxter, LA Times. Kevin was here for the Dynamo LA game, the 1-1 draw, in the game that he aforementioned reminded us that Chicharito had no shots. I just never thought it was going to work. Not with the current roster they have. So it's on Dennis Pecosa, the sporting director. It's on Guillermo Barros-Schelotto, and they're going to have to get it done. But after two games, doesn't look good. I think the Dynamo are going to get their first win under Tab Ramos against the LA Galaxy. Again, that is Thursday night, 7 o'clock on 2DNA FS1, and then of course tomorrow, don't forget 11:30, the Houston Dash on CBS All Access. Taking on the Portland Thorns, semifinals of the NWSL Challenge Cup. A win, and they'll play on CBS nationally on Sunday at 11:30. All right, we're going to take a break. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. It's brought to you by the great John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. We thank John and his firm for supporting this show, getting soccer on the airwaves. And, of course, we always thank you for tuning in. We'll take a quick break, come back. We got some great interviews coming up in this second hour. We've got number one, Graham Smith on Leeds United, the football writer at the Yorkshire Evening Post, Tom Marshall, ESPN FC, and Jane Campbell of the Houston Dash. We'll take a break.
ESPN 97.5.